Hey Budai Nation, welcome to the Ecom Show, where we invite e-commerce entrepreneurs, marketers, and agencies to talk about e-commerce, the best strategies and tactics, and what to implement in your own e-com store. Before we jump into this episode, I ask you to subscribe to this podcast, and if you like it, make sure you share it with at least one friend. As you probably know, we don't run ads. Our growth is purely organic, so it would mean the world to me if you could support us. And now let's jump into the episode. Hey everyone, here is Daniel Budai with a brand new episode of the Ecom Show. And today I'm here with an agency owner and founder, Anthony. And he's the CEO and founder of Arctic Gray. This is a website design, CRO, and everything that is related to Shopify Plus websites company. And they've been in business for quite a long time. He will tell us how long. And they have more than 80 team members. So it's a pretty large agency. So very interesting story. And I'm excited to hear also what he thinks about website design and CRO nowadays. Hey, Anthony, it's good to have you here. How are you?
Nice to see you, Daniel. Doing good. Actually, co-founder. So we've got our other co-founder, Jake. And yeah, we don't know who the CEO is yet. We still don't have one. So I mostly do operations.
Yeah, I like this phrase that you don't have titles, you just have roles. You know what to do, but you don't really have titles, right? I like this kind of mindset.
So yeah.
Everyone just knows what they have to do. So let's start with the story of the company. When did you launch the company? When did you meet your co-founder?
Yeah, so our co-founder, we were friends since we were 11 years old. So we've known each other a long time. And then we started Arctic Gray in September of 2015. So we're 8 years, 8 months.
Okay. And was it your first business?
Mm-mm. No, I did a lot of different businesses, some in tech, some not in tech. But this is the main thing right now.
Yeah, for a while, right? And why did you start with, you know, website design and Shopify? Why did you choose this platform?
Yeah, so basically started with just web design and, you know, built a lot of different things for, you know, lawyers, plumbers, this, that, whatever. And it was hard for, you know, justifying work to revenue. And then we started building some e-commerce stores where people could see like an exact correlation of, oh, we made this update, these improvements change. We see, you know, conversion rate improvements, average order value improvements, customer lifetime values expanding, things like that. So there were more quantitative reasons to switch to just e-com. And then in terms of platforms, we started on everything. So we were doing Illusion, Drupal, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, Shopify, Wix, custom, you know, sites and everything like that. And over the years, switched to just exclusively Shopify. It's just their rate of innovation was far superior to anybody else, probably even combined. If you were to combine all the other companies to what Shopify would do, Shopify would roll out way more features and updates than anybody else. So their just rate of growth was, they were a clear winner to pick and kind of put all of your eggs in one basket there.
Mm, I see. So you could see the highest growth there. But on the other hand, I would assume that the highest competition, the biggest competition is also there. Is that correct?
Probably, yeah. Yeah, especially now. Mm-hmm. Not always. You know, there were a lot of people on, you know, Salesforce, Magento, BigCommerce. That's probably where the other competition was. Still is, I would say, to certain extents, but Shopify for sure is it's the major competitor.
Yeah. I think we have some commonalities because I started with all kinds of email marketing and copywriting, and I also niched down into e-commerce around 2017, 18. Because I could see that just like you, when I sent out an email, it generated revenue by the next day, and it was very clear to see all the numbers. You can track everything, especially with Shopify.
Yeah.
And which is great. And regarding competition, I think there are many players now because it's relatively easy to get started both with email and websites, but the amount of high-level competition is actually not that huge. So not many players provide really high-quality email marketing or websites. That's my opinion. So if you have a very solid, you know, foundation and understanding of good website, email, creatives, all of that, then actually not that difficult to stand out. That's my opinion. Do you agree?
Yes and no. You know, as you get kind of further up the funnel, the target market also reduces as well. Like, you know, if you're talking mm-hmm. about every Shopify merchant, for instance, there's, you know, there's millions. But then once you get to large market or even just enterprise, there's probably somewhere around 1,000, maybe even just under. I looked at something that said somewhere around 600 enterprise markets are kind of fit for Shopify. It could be more. That was just like one article that I read. So your target market does reduce drastically. So, you know, if you have 600, you know, potential targets and, you know, 10 or so enterprise level design and development firms, you know, it's 60 each, right? So
yeah. Makes sense. Yeah, actually that's right. I think, our target market for my agency, it's a bit, wider. I would say around 20, 25,000, typically starting from low seven-figure companies. Mm-hmm. But we also work with not Shopify, but like 80% Shopify, but not exclusively. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you are right. It's not a huge pool.
No,
right?
But a good market, really good market. And it's mm-hmm. fun. And it's all like, you know, brands we know and, you know, household brands that you might have grown up with and things like that. So it's pretty cool to be in that environment, to see things on the shelves one day and then suddenly you're talking to them on mm-hmm. on call. So it's fun.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we have these Shopify themes nowadays, landing page builder apps, all of that. And you can do many things with these, but I'm curious, if somebody goes to your agency, how can you provide more than that? What would you tell them?
Well, we typically start with an audit, a UX and UI audit, and we always start with customer experience first. You know, from homepage, collection page, product page, cart drawer, you know, pre-purchase upsells, post-purchase upsells, email follow-ups, managing, you know, my account, especially for like subscription and recurring revenue type of products. It's customer journey first, and then once we, you know, design the best customer journey, the least clicks, nice incentives, not too much where it's distracting and avoids checkout. Then we reverse engineer and try to bring that to life. So that's typically where we start. And then when we deploy things, we like to deploy with A/B testing. So here's the, you know, product page that you have right now. We'll send 50% of the traffic there, 50% to this new product page. We'll run some A/B tests, whether it's, you know, are we doing average order value increase? Are we doing, you know, just strictly conversions, total sale amount? Are they doing subscriptions more? But, you know, by defaulting as subscribe and save, are we getting more subscriptions? So there's a lot of different variables that you can play with. And then we just use data-driven decisions. You know, did what we do work? Is it better? If not, let's try again. You know, if it is, cool, great. Let's launch that and let's start a new A/B test with something else and just constant iterations and refinements to, you know, if you could build up a 0.1% conversion rate increase each iteration or every couple iterations at the end of a year, it does add up.
Yeah. All of these little changes incrementally. So just to make it clear, it can be an ongoing service, right? Not just you create a new website or new landing page, but it can be an ongoing optimization as well, like CRO or AOV.
Yeah, everyone has a different style. I would say the ones that, you know, and we work with some for many, many years, the ones that just constantly have that growth, they're constantly iterating. small changes. They're doing some sort of testing, some sort of A/B testing. They're trying new things. You know, it's not a set it and forget it. Some companies do well like that, but the ones that really show growth are always iterating or refining. Not necessarily us doing everything. Sometimes their internal teams are constantly playing with things or new marketing. But yeah, it's consistency, consistently refining over time.
Yeah, that's how they grow and improve. And I know you are not you are from the US originally, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And where are you based now?
Right now I'm in Tamarindo in Costa Rica. It's like it's a little surf town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it where your team located in Latin America? I checked the website and I could see a lot of, you know, Spanish names.
We're all over the place. Okay. So we're 100% remote company. So we've got people in the US, in Europe, in Latin America, all over the place.
Yeah, got it. And we got a question actually from YouTube. So somebody commented that, how do you find good people? Everyone is so lazy. So yeah, how do you find them? I know hiring is difficult, especially at your size.
Yeah, it is hard. And sometimes depending on what you do, you don't know for a couple months if they're good, because some of these development projects do take a long time. So, you know, we try to start with a series of testing. We look at, you know, communication, response time, clarity, and we try to do our best to test and evaluate. And then once we hire them, we try to teach them and show them, you know, really good tricks, give them good documentation. And some of them cut it and some of them don't. It's one of those things where you don't really know for sure until you have a bit of a complex project that they have to execute. And sometimes two months in, you're like, wow, you know, they're just not up to our standards, and you have to replace them. And sometimes, you know, they're great. What we do realize though, is you get a good feeling of some people, then you get a bad feeling of some people. And, you know, if you think that somebody's got potential and drive and, you know, kind of the mindset to improve and the willingness to learn and the willingness to try, those people tend to do a lot better. So we look for little subtle things like that in the hiring process, but that took a long time to start and decipher what little nuanced details to look into.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, you can have different tests and ask different questions, all of that, but it will help you to, you know, find people, better people. Actually, when I started my company, it was like 50-50, like hit or miss. Like 50% was actually good, 50% not. So completely hit and miss. Now it's more like 90-80%, I would say, of them are good people who stay here for even 1 year and more. So these systems help, but you will never achieve 100%. That's my experience.
No.
Impossible. Yeah.
No, that's just part of it. That's the nature of the beast.
Hey Budai Nation, welcome to the Ecom Show. I ask you to subscribe to this podcast, and if you like it, make sure you share it with at least one friend. As you probably know, we don't run ads. Our growth is purely organic, so it would mean the world to me if you could support us. And now let's jump into the episode. I'm curious, how do you manage these time zones? Because you, as you said, you are everywhere, three continents. So how do you manage time zones? Do you work with each other, like somebody in Pacific time zones with somebody in Eastern Europe, or you try to somehow organize them based on time zone?
It actually kind of happened by accident and ended up being a really good thing. Where, you know, we do hot fixes, live site changes and things like that during, like, most of our clients are in New York. So we try to schedule everything around launches and you know, EST time zones. So we were there for any critical emergency hotfix changes during the day. And then we've got a night shift that'll work on, you know, longer development tasks. So we truly are working 24/7 on things. That was, you know, accidental, but it turned out to be a really great thing. And then we try to schedule some overlap, you know, if we have different teams working on different things, just making sure that there is some overlap So we can have a, you know, a connect point on a daily basis and say, okay, what did you get done over the last 8-12 hours? And then kind of pick up from there. So it worked, it actually works really well with how our workflows have been set up.
Yeah, that's very nice. We just implemented something similar at the end of last year that is a 3-4 hour time window, which is in the morning for New York and early afternoon in Europe. When everyone works, you know, you must be available in those few hours, and it really helps to connect with everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that works. And then it also depends on the type of work too. So sometimes we have, you know, just backend engineers building something where they don't really need much customer or you know, client or merchant specific support. Some of these are infrastructures for how we run the business and things like that. And it's best to bother them as little as possible. Say, you know, here's the blueprint, here's what we're trying to build and create. And then, you know, they just focus. And sometimes, you know, these calls and things like that aren't always super productive. You know, heavy call days, not much gets done. So it's good to separate, you know, engineers from too much communication and allow them to do what they're really good
at. Yeah, I agree. I never work with, you know, engineers, but we also have technical people, and maybe they just join 1-2 calls per month with clients and some internal calls, and that's it. So yeah, freely most of the times.
We tend to have like solutions engineers for that, like client facing calls, like somebody that can speak tech but then also human, because there is like that big difference between people that are just so fixated on programming and engineering that when you're talking to certain people, it sounds like gibberish. So we do have the kind of hybrid solutions engineer that can speak tech but then can also speak common sense and logic and explain in a way that anyone can understand.
So if you had to summarize what a high converting website is in 2024, a Shopify Plus website, let's say 3 things, what would you say? What needs to be focused?
Speed and performance for sure. You know, if you've got a 3-second average load time on a site and then you shave it down to 2 seconds, the average increase in sales is about 7%, which is significant. Fewer clicks is great. And then it depends on the type of product, like, you know, subscription first is becoming, you know, and mobile first, obviously 80%+ of traffic's on mobile. And then just as few clicks as possible, Shopify homepages or shoppable homepages. So people don't even have to go to the product pages, AI integrated tools, that show you what products on the homepage are really great based off of my last time on the site. What did I spend the most time on? And then the AI will look at, okay, I looked at product A the most. Let's look through all of our transaction history and see what was purchased in conjunction with product A. And let's show those products. So right on the homepage, we can really create a dynamic AI-generated product recommendation that will show the most relevant products to that individual based off of prior actions that they've made. So that could be pretty cool as well.
Use apps for this, or how do you come up with these feeds?
Yeah, we use apps. Rebuy, I think, probably has the best tool for that in terms of like an AI recommendation tool, probably Rebuy. Nosto is good. There's some others as well, but Rebuy is my fan favorite at the moment.
Interesting.
Recommendations.
Yeah. And regarding website speed, so I think for many guys, it's a bit too technical, or they don't appreciate the importance of it and how it can increase sales on the website. That's my experience. And maybe they are just afraid to, you know, it's a bit technical. How can you increase the website speed?
Well, there's a lot of things. I mean, how it's built is one. So what we like to try to do is map out the full user experience on Figma first. So we know end to end from homepage to collection page to cart and upsells and what product recommendation tools and things like that are we going to use, so that we're not just like adding and adding and adding, where you can zoom out and say, okay, here's the end goal. Now what's the best way to build and approach this? So that's one way. And then there's like a lot of just, you can go in and clean up code. You can minify scripts. You can, utilize defer and lazy load to trigger when certain things load based off of where you are on a page. And then also like the total content on a page. Some people want to show everything all at once. We're guilty of that of our website. On our homepage, you can kind of scroll for a while because we want to show all the things that we can do to help Shopify merchants, and we feel it's all important to have. So we've done our best to have a very large content related page and then utilize, lazy load and image optimization tools and what we can to make it as quick and snappy as possible while providing all the details. Like with merchants, you'll get, some product pages that you might want to compare against other products, and you might want to have a lot of content on there. And that's where you want to A/B test and say, okay, well, what's the trade-off? What's the trade-off of speed and performance versus educating the buyer to making a good informed decision? And that's where, people have their opinions, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, let's run a test. Let's make it faster. Let's take out some of this stuff, run half the traffic there. Let's keep all of the, product specs here. Let's run half the traffic there and see what's converting.
What tool would you use for A/B testing?
There's quite a few.
They are very pricey, right? Some of them.
They are. Yeah, they are. But, if you're dealing, and it depends on, total sales and how much you're really pushing through. There's a point where if you get a 1% increase in conversion rate, it'll pay for itself 10,000 times over on some sites. And on some sites, it doesn't make any sense. And even if they get a 1% increase in conversion rate, overall sales don't quantify the cost of the A/B testing tool. So, there's a point where you just want to use best judgment. And then I would say, at a few million dollars a year in sales, that's when, A/B testing really becomes relevant. You can start at, probably $1 million a year in sales it's good to help get you to that next step. So, but yes, some are pretty expensive. But some are great. VWO is good. Convert, IntelliGems. There's a few really good ones out there. IntelliGems is nice in terms of like price A/B testing. They've got really good tools if you want to test out pricing of products.
I know there was a Google Optimizer, that's the name, and it was free. Is it still available or not anymore?
Yeah, you can use that. You need more tech-savvy people to utilize those tools. With some of these apps, it's more, developer-free. You can kind of play around with the stuff yourself to a certain extent. They make it much easier.
Yeah. I think it could be good for a smaller store as well if they want to get started. But I agree that below like $1 million a year, it doesn't make too much sense. That's my experience as well. Like maybe just better to have somebody with some experience to take a look at the site, coming up with recommendations. Today we talked to a business and they want us to manage their Google Ads and email marketing. And we could improve those, but the website is the main bottleneck because the conversion is just so low. Like from Google Ads is 0.5, from email is 2%, which is very low. I don't even know how they are profitable, honestly. And we told them that the website needs to be improved a lot. And if you have some experience with your eyes, you can see those points and they just need to get it better. So it's not a rocket science, I think.
And it depends on average order value. Like what's the average ticket item? 0.5% is pretty common.
Less than $100, I think. $70. Yeah.
At a few grand, per average cart, 0.5 is kind of understandable. If you're doing, $5,000 a cart. At $100, that's really low.
Yeah. 100%. So bit more personal question. I'm really curious, what would you tell to other agency owners or maybe to your younger self when you started out, how to run a, you know, solid agency, a profitable agency with a team size that you have? What would you say?
A few things. Consistency is key for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, if every day you're making a small improvement, at the end of a year, you're, you know, 365 times better. So just consistently refining, you know, slow and steady, is good. You know, you want to kind of get across the finish line so quickly sometimes that you make shortcuts, but then every shortcut you make, you end up having to go back to where you started and doing it right the first time. So, you know, being patient and just trusting the goals and what you're trying to do, and then prioritizing tasks. You know, there's 1,001 things that you can be doing, and it's just kind of list them all out and just say, you know, what can I leverage the most? You know, what's going to really impact the business? You know, you can spend, you know, a week on a really great email campaign that goes out once, or you can spend a week on a flow that will trigger every single person that ever hits your site. So it's like, okay, well, focus on the flow, because that's the gift that keeps giving. Yeah, and prioritizing things that you feel will truly like move the needle.
Yeah. I'm curious, now you have around 80 people, so it was a gradual growth, like year over year, you added more and more people. Because for us, for example, we are much less. We are 20 people now, or 21. But actually, we grew to 32 in like 2 years. And after, we kind of slowly became more efficient and went down. Or was it different for you? Like every year you added a few more people? Or
similar. So, you know, we tend to hire one at a time. It could be multiple in a month. But we hire one at a time. We'd get to a point and then we'd refine and then bring it down to just like who we feel the A players are, go on a hiring thing again, refine, mm-hmm. bring it down to, you know, just kind of weed out, you know, the people that might not be performing as well as the others are not really good team players. So it's kind of, you know, a 2 steps forward, 1 step back, 2 step forward, 1 step back kind of thing.
Yeah, got you. All right. So thanks for sharing your story, Anthony. And, these principles about high converting Shopify sites. If anyone wants to find you, working with you, where they should go, how they can find you?
ArcticGrey.com, ArcticGrey.com.
How did you find this name, by the way?
Jake and I, our co-founder, we were coming up with different names, and we found out that the Arctic Grey Wolf was the only wolf never hunted by man. I don't know if that's actually true. There was an article that we read and we thought that was kind of cool to have, you know, to be named after the only wolf never hunted by man. Again, I don't know how true that is, but that was what we believed at the time we named the company.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks again, Anthony. Thanks everyone who listened to us or watched the live stream today. And stay tuned. Every week we come out with a new episode with agency founders and e-commerce marketers, e-commerce founders. And I wish you a great day.
Likewise. Thanks, Daniel. Have a good one.